This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Gar Alperovitz, the Lionel R. Bauman Professor of Political Economy at the University of Maryland and co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative. Gar is author of numerous articles and books, including America Beyond Capitalism, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy. Gar Alperovitz is here today to tell us about his most recent book, What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution, published in 2013. Welcome, Gar.
Thanks for having me. Look forward to talking with you.
What led you to write your book? What is your goal?
Well, it's an area of the new economy movement that has been building up all over the country. And I've been working in this area for many, many years. But in the last 2 or 3 years, and I think probably because the pain levels around the society are growing and deepening, both economic and social pain, but also moral pain, with climate problems being so acute and challenging people, there's been a movement. It's called the New Economy Movement, but it involves co-ops and worker-owned companies and land trusts and environmental projects and a whole range of activities that challenge the dominant paradigm in very practical ways on the ground. And that has been building up and I think has become extremely active. So I've decided to stop working on a much, much larger book, which is related to the What Then Must We Do book I've just published, with a view to kind of offer something to the movement in a shorter form, in a kind of easily read form, that begins to cover what is happening and how the dynamics are working and where it might be going over time as our larger economic system is in such decay and our political system. So it's really an attempt to speak to the moment about what all this might mean and where we might go and the strategy to really build up an alternative strategic movement to democratize the economy and to make it ecologically sustainable over time as this movement begins to take on real force.
Would you just briefly summarize the downward trends we are experiencing in our society?
Well, the first thing to note is that when long, long trends keep getting worse, you are facing a systemic problem, not a simple garden variety political problem that is caused by the Tea Party or stalemates in Congress. These trends have been going on for 30 or 40 years, and they are much deeper than what you see in the headlines. So, for instance, the top 1% over the last 30 years has taken virtually all of the gains that the economic system has produced. That's an extraordinary fact, and it's related to how the economic system and the political system operate. Looked at another way, the bottom 80% of workers have had virtually no increase, marginal changes for 30 years, so that the gains went elsewhere. Or if you look at the CO2 production and various ones of the climate difficulty gases, they've gone up 30% over 30 years. If you look at incarceration, they've gone up steadily for 30 years. If you're interested in the question of liberty, we imprison far greater percentage of our society than virtually any other major society that includes Russia. And we're talking about 7 to 8 times the rates in Europe. And it has been increasing over 3 decades. So in almost every area you look at, we are at the bottom of the ladder now of the advanced countries on virtually all major indicators. I summarize a good deal of this from international data, healthcare outcomes, maternal survival, infant survival, ecological issues. On almost all of them, we are near the bottom in the advanced countries because the trends have been going this way. And that tells you that it isn't simply 1 year and it's not simply what's going on in Congress. The power of the political economic system in an ongoing way is no longer countered by the traditional progressive forces. And so the trends are likely to deepen and the pain is likely to deepen. I think that's a wake-up call that's creating this new movement called the New Economy Movement.
What is the underlying systemic cause of these downward trends?
Well, you're living in a system of corporate-dominated capitalism, but that's very different from 19th-century small-business competitive capitalism. And this system, for better or worse, in both Europe and the United States, was countered by the famous economist John Kenneth Galbraith called it countervailing power. It wasn't just progressive politics that would try to regulate the big corporations or try to tax the very wealthy and the corporations in order to provide for social programs. That's true. It was progressive politics, but behind that was institutional power in all of the advanced countries, and the institutional power was primarily labor unions. That's where the countervailing institutional power was that sort of kept the system in balance, kind of, sort of. And the problem is, and it is a fundamental problem in the system, it is not a small problem, that labor unions have declined in the United States from roughly 34.5% of the labor force in 1953 at the peak. It's always been a weak labor movement compared with, say, Sweden, where 80% of the labor force was in unions. But in the United States, it's now gone down to 11.6% overall, 6.6% in the private sector, and public unions and private unions are a radically diminished institutional power base for progressive politics. And even when unions, for instance, were at odds on environmental issues, often, they were still critical to the election of progressive senators and congressmen and congresswomen who would vote on environmental issues. I happened to, at one point, work for Senator Gaylord Nelson, the founder of Earth Day, and he was a very, very powerful environmentalist. But he couldn't have gotten elected without labor support as well. And all of that has declined radically on a 35-year trend. And if you look at the one single indicator, there are many others, behind the decline of the kind of traditional balancing power in the corporate system, it is the radical decline of labor, which means we're in a totally different world. Either we build up a new politics and a new institutional base, or these long decaying trends are going to get worse, in my view.
Why are our current political strategies or approaches inadequate to reverse the downward trends?
Well, I think the basic reason is that the institutional base, and this is, you know, it's time for us to think about systems and institutions, not just movements and politics. And I am very concerned that we build a new movement. But unless we build new institutions as well, that movement will be very weak compared with the corporate opposition. So what we're beginning to see in the new economy movement, and what I write about in this book, What Then Must We Do?, is an explosion of interest and activity and sophistication in building new institutions that point in a very different direction, but also begin to give a power base over time to a new politics if they are built up steadily, step by step, over the next period of time. So, for instance, co-ops are now very, very much on people's agenda. Worker-owned co-ops, worker-owned companies, consumer co-ops, land trusts, various forms of democratizing ownership in real practical terms are a hot subject in the new economy movement, and rightly so, because in many communities the pain levels are very high and new forms of enterprise, co-ops being the most common one, are building up. Worker-owned companies in general, that most people don't realize how deep the American experience is to build on in this area. 130 million Americans are already members of co-ops, and largely co-ops and credit unions, which are one-person, one-vote cooperative banks. That's a huge percentage. 40% of the population has some experience with this. And the new economy movement, and what I've written about in the book, is building on this really vast storehouse of knowledge of how to do this and is taking it forward. Another 10.3 million Americans are members of worker-owned companies in a different form, the so-called employee stock ownership plan. And many of these are democratic ownership, and many of these are beginning to reform their internal structure so that they become more and more democratic in fact as well as in ownership structure. There are land trusts exploding all over the country, which are usually neighborhood nonprofit ownership of land, another democratic form of ownership. So many, many states have begun to consider legislation to replicate the Bank of North Dakota, which is a public form of bank. It's been there for 90 years, very successful. And if you look case by case by case, you're beginning to see people who are both integrating these new models, that the principle of which is some form of broad democratic ownership, with a vision of an ecologically sustainable society, and beginning to roll up their sleeves and not only build political movement, which is very important, I don't want in any way diminish that, but side by side recognizing the need to build an institutional basis for the next politics. And that's a very exciting part of the new economy movement, and it's the heart of the strategic vision of this book, What Then Must We Do? to answer that question, the title of the book, What Then Must We Do, is it is time to build a movement that draws on these institutional developments and begins to build them in a steady and serious way as pain deepens over the next decades, to really get serious about taking these developments from the margins into a very powerful movement. And as the pain deepens, I think more and more people are going to be attracted to that vision, and then the responsibility to really get serious about it is ours.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gar Alperovitz, the Lionel R. Bauman Professor of Political Economy at the University of Maryland and author of the book, What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. In your book, you highlight that changing the way property is owned and controlled is key to developing a new system. Would you say more and elaborate?
Well, we are really talking about what I sometimes call the next system and the next system project. You know, most people have traditionally thought that the only systems are capitalism and socialism, and what they really mean is corporate capitalism of the kind we know about, and the former Soviet Union. And the fact is that's not the only possibility. There are many other possibilities. Just to stand back from this, historically, political economic systems really largely revolve around who owns property, because it gives power to the political structure of the system as a whole. So, for instance, very briefly, in feudalism, land was the form of property, and the lords and the church and the king owned the land and dominated the power structure of that system. In 19th century capitalism, it was largely a small business capitalism, where you had the Jacksonian era, and it was a populist kind of in the later part of the century. And many of the people who had power were small businessmen called farmers. American farmers were small business people and always have been, unlike, for instance, peasant farming in other countries. And that gave kind of the lift to much of 19th century American politics. In the former Soviet Union, the state owned the property, and the result was state domination, and not a very pretty picture in many areas, though there were some social gains in healthcare and other areas. It was not a democratic system, and it was not a system that fostered liberty. And the conservatives, I'm obviously on the progressive side of this, but the conservatives who said if you concentrate all the wealth in the state, you're going to have difficulty with liberty and democracy, were right about this, and we need to acknowledge that as well. So in modern era, corporations dominate the wealth holdership, and they dominate the political economy, particularly in the United States, more and more as labor declines. Now, that really poses the question, because, you know, if you don't like corporate capitalism, you don't like state socialism, then either we begin to think very seriously about a new direction and begin to work in that direction, or there aren't any choices left. What I think is exciting about the new economy movement, and what I try to write about in What Then Must We Do, is that if you begin looking at the 130 million people already involved in co-ops and 10 million involved in different forms of worker ownership and public banks like North Dakota and the states like Vermont, which are moving to a single-payer health system, which is a democratic ownership of the core part of the health system. If you begin to look at municipal enterprise, you know, 25% of American electricity is already either city-owned municipal entities or co-ops. You find a vast experience, that very decentralized vision of ownership, but very serious in terms of its economics. And that is building up slowly and steadily. And you begin to kind of get a picture, if we work at it, of what a very different vision for the long haul might be, that starts at what the Catholic Church talks about in terms of subsidiarity, doing whatever you can at the local level first and only moving to higher levels when necessary. And that kind of vision of a decentralized democratic economy that is ecologically sustainable and anchored in a vision of local communities as a core democratic institution, that vision, I think, doesn't look anything like corporate capitalism or state socialism. And as it begins to get serious, I think it's going to begin looking at some economic issues are really too big for localities and even too big for states. So, for instance, we just did nationalize General Motors when it got in trouble. Now, we've given it back after the taxpayers subsidized it. We did the same in a different way to Chrysler, and we still own, because we nationalized, one of the largest insurance companies in the world, AIG. Now, I think we're going to have more crises in the banking system and more crises in the national health care system. And I think at some point, if we learn enough and develop enough, some of them will become public utilities because it's the only way to stop the drive towards growth and pollution. But that's down the line. I mean, the first question is how we build up enough knowledge. Think about it this way. In the years before the New Deal, in the decades before the New Deal, in the, quote, state and local laboratories of democracy, people were experimenting with many, many things at the state and local level. And when the moment was right, they became the basis and the principles and the design of the legislation that became the New Deal. So that, in fact, Social Security and labor law legislation and health minimum safety legislation, all sorts of strategies were incubated in these projects. And I think something like that is possible. If we do our homework and roll up our sleeves building on these projects locally, we may have the possibility of laying the groundwork for something far more far-reaching that's based on the same principles at larger levels over time. And I think that's what the new economy movement's about. I think the thing to say about this, it's very idealistic, and it's theoretically challenging about where we might go, but it is exceedingly practical. The projects that we're seeing on the ground all over the country don't have anything to say unless they are very, very practical. And when they are practical, worker ownership, neighborhood ownership, new land trusts, etc., an odd thing happens. We find people who self-identify sometimes as conservative. They're not like the national people on the radio, ideologues who kind of spout conservative rhetoric, but they are practical people. And we find that in many of the projects that I've visited or been involved in helping create, very different alliances about changing ownership become possible at the local level among unexpected allies because they're really not interested in rhetoric. They're interested in what helps build this community if it's real and practical. So there's some real possibilities that I think progressives need to think about as well, reaching out far beyond to some of the parts of the small business community and beginning also just to reach for folks you might not expect are involved in what you're concerned with.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Gar Alperovitz, the Lionel R. Bauman Professor of Political Economy at the University of Maryland and author of the book, What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution. In your book, you speak about historical context being important for promoting needed change. How might the current historical context be favorable to changing to a new system?
Well, it's not only promoting, but creating the conditions. And I think millions of Americans are waking up and have a wake-up call on this point, that the system is creating conditions that are creating huge pain for millions and millions of Americans. The unemployment rate, if you measured it properly, is probably around 15%. In some of the poorer communities we've worked in Cleveland, it's 40% in the black community. College students end college with huge debts and little chance of getting a really high-paying job. Extraordinary how what used to be a public educational system has been ripped apart in that way. The ecological decay and the climate change threats are growing. The political system is obviously dead-ended and in stalemate, and what's Washington, quote, is broken. Well, people are not foolish. First, they understand the pain when they or their kids are facing this reality. Even Social Security is being cut back by a Democratic president in the richest country in the history of the world. Obviously, something is wrong, and people are feeling it in terms, I think, of social and economic pain, but they're also seeing it every day in the newspapers and on television that the system doesn't function the way it's supposed to or the way it did. And I think it's causing a kind of beginning revolution in consciousness, in understanding. You know, it's very different when people say, if we elect the next guy, something will change. And when they say, no, there's a much, much deeper problem here, a systemic problem, they may not use that word. But the notion that something profound is wrong, I think, is growing. And that's when people begin to say, hey, we've got to try some new direction. And it's not just any new direction. It's time for thinking and thinking through. If you don't like corporate capitalism as it operates without the kind of counterbalancing of the labor and progressive forces, And if you don't like state socialism, either we find a new and very American solution that begins in local communities and builds up to a different democratized vision and changing the ownership of capital from the 1% to very broad cooperatives, nonprofit corporations, et cetera, a very different vision, or that system and that pain will continue. And that's a very interesting historical context. It's a very painful one, but it is a profoundly important emerging historical context, which is teaching people that either we look at this in a new way or the pain and trends will continue. And that's the kind of context in which very important things can happen if people get serious, both about doing practical things, but also about the theory of where they're going and raising their sights to a larger potential vision of what this is all about. That's the hard part in this, recognizing that we all are historic actors in a sense, that it's really almost personal whether or not we're willing to look at how very large the problem is and then how we can begin to work in a decade-by-decade process. If you want heroes or heroines, think of the women's movement in the 19th century, where state by state by state, decade by decade by decade, they fought from the ground up and finally, only later, got to the national level to get the vote in the early part of the 20th century, finally. Or the civil rights movement, beginning in the 1930s and 40s and 50s before actually the 1960s, laying that groundwork. And you can find that in the environmental movement as well. That means standing back and understanding we won't have cheap, easy victories, but that this is a decade-by-decade historic process that we're involved in, either simply to improve the conditions that we have, starting at the ground up, changing who owns businesses, land, et cetera, and the cooperatives and so forth, or maybe laying the groundwork for something far more far-reaching and a transformation of the overall system as a long-term goal. But it is a step-by-step process, and it requires something existential, personal, to see that we are actually potentially, if we so understand ourselves, like those women in the 19th century, like civil rights workers in the 30s and 40s when it was really hard, like the people before the New Deal working, laying groundwork and understanding that it's a long, long fight, and the task now is to really begin to both solve problems but to lay the groundwork for something more far-reaching over time.
You highlight the importance of community in moving toward new possibilities. Would you say more about the community-sustaining system you envision in your future?
There's two ways to look at it, probably more than two ways. The practical things need to be done where people live and where the pain is. And so that means starting at the local level, community by community, and solving problems in communities. There are lots of interesting things happening all over the country of that kind that the newspapers don't cover and don't have staff to cover. They're not much interested, but the newspapers are in such trouble and television's in such financial trouble that they don't cover this. But I should give you all a website, community-wealth.org is a website that covers the kind of things we're talking about. So it's community-wealth that will give you information. So partly, that's where the pain is. And so either we begin dealing with it locally, and that's where the ecological problems are, or it doesn't get solved. But also a larger vision that is a democratic vision had better begin to think of, you can't have democracy in a system with a big D for the whole system unless you actually have people who experience democracy with a small d where they live, the communities. So if we want to move beyond the traditional models of corporate capitalism and state socialism, we had better be thinking first and foremost about democratizing work, democratizing local communities, really changing the power structure. That's the heart of a democratic system. And if it isn't real where people live, it won't be real in terms of genuine, energized, real participatory democracy at the national level. So ecologically, the same story is true. Unless we build ecologically sustainable communities, and that means stabilizing those communities rather than literally throwing them away like the Detroits and the Clevelands, where the population in Detroit is 1 million people have been thrown out of work, and so the city disintegrates, or in Cleveland, it's gone from 900,000 to less than 400,000, and the whole city is thrown away. You can't do sustainability planning when that's going on. So really looking at what it takes to make healthy communities is the key both to building a democratic system and an ecologically sustainable and equitable system as a whole. So I give primary emphasis to starting at the bottom, community by community by community, and then looking at what it will take in regional and national and state policies at higher levels to make that real also. But without starting at the community, we can't get there, even though obviously we're going to have to move to the state national level for some policies and some institutions ultimately.
What most stands in the way of moving toward a new economic system?
The easy answer, and the one, you know, comes to mind first, may actually be the wrong answer, and I'll tell you why I think that. The easy answer is that the power structure of the very big corporations and the wealthy obviously dominates the political system, and that stands in the way of progressive change of most kinds, changing the distribution of income, changing the distribution of wealth, changing the distribution of power. But the reason I say the easy answer may be wrong is that what really stands in the way is that people do not yet, on a large basis, have a sense that they could be empowered personally. Who, me? That's the question. Yes, you and me. That is when people, and now here, think of the feminist movement, think of the environmental movement, think of the civil rights movement. When the flame ignited and people realized that they actually had more power than they thought, then they realized that the power system was different from, oh, we can't do it because they're too powerful. When people begin to ignite and move and build as a movement, and when they create new institutions as a movement, they begin to understand that the power is with people who act, not necessarily entirely with those who dominate. Major and fundamental change, even revolutions, common as grass in world history. I mean, the Berlin Wall fell, the Soviet Union collapsed, apartheid collapsed, all against enormous odds. You know, a bunch of farmers and small traders in the 18th century took on the greatest power in the world, the British Empire. And here we are, the revolution occurred. So I think the really fundamental problem is look in the mirror, whether or not we are willing to rise to the power that Americans can have if they begin building and seeing themselves as movement builders. Change happens. So I am not a determinist. It is possible that, like Rome, the American Empire will just fade away. But it's also possible that Americans will begin to get serious about things like this new economy movement, taking on building step by step, and over time beginning to try to challenge and transform the decaying system that we live in. So that's obviously where the action is, and that's where we can actually do something rather than wring our hands and complain.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Think national, as well as regional, as well as local, beginning to think, where does this all take us? Part of the new economy movement is really oriented to local projects, and that's critical, absolutely critical. But I think we need to raise our sights to what would it actually mean nationally and regionally if we began to think of ourselves as ultimately transforming the entire system. And if there's any one message, that's the message of this book, What Then Must We Do, is to also raise our sights to systemic change, beginning at communities but not ending at communities.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Gar.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You were just listening to Gar Alperovitz, the Lionel R. Bauman Professor of Political Economy at the University of Maryland and author of the book, What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution, published in 2013 by Chelsea Green Publishing. For more information, check on the web at whatthenmustwedo.org. You are invited to join Gar Alperovitz for his presentation at Ellett Bay Book Company in Seattle, Saturday, April 27th at 7 p.m. Again, that's Saturday, April 27th at 7 p.m. at Ellett Bay Books. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.